everybody. I am Sherry Nova, and I am here with French-trained chef Tony Chiodo, who cooked in the most famous restaurants in the whole of Australia and is the author of 2 books. And we are so excited today to talk to you about romance with food. Now, you're probably like, what does that even mean? Tony, please say hello and talk to us about what does this even mean? Like, what is romance with food? Because brains are popping and exploding everywhere.
Hi, Sherry. Thanks for the intro. So, this is a kind of an amazing topic, or it's not even a topic. It's something I've been romancing for ages, is the whole of romance with food. And I kind of thought that everyone on the planet was kind of having the same experience or the same affair with food. Yet, it's taken me a while to realize that it's actually not so. So, what is romancing with food? And it is funny. We started this chat and I realized I've got volumes of material I've written in the past, and it was just my travels around food and different countries, different cuisines, different shopping trips where I've written about textures of food, colors of food, the taste of food, the act of shopping and just getting turned on. Now, as I said, I thought everyone was having this experience.
No.
And I kind of would walk around teaching, doing classes and hoping that people would really understand me. And I realized that actually I was kind of the one often turned on, excited and entertained actually. And often people would look at me thinking, what in the hell is he talking about? You know, they wouldn't verbally say that. I'd see it in their body. Right. They're like, well, Tony, can you actually give me the formula for that? Can you actually give me the recipe for that? And I would often have to turn myself inside out to actually give that. Like, having written cookbooks was one of the hardest things, was writing cookbooks, was putting a proper recipe down. So what I would do is have someone help me. I'd have a friend. I would cook the food. She would write down the ingredients, the method, because I don't actually have a real method or a scale when I cook. So this is kind of like how I look at romancing food. So is it measured? Is it contained?
Right.
Is there a freaking method, or is there just madness to it? And there's this creation that wants to be done or had or felt, and yet how do I get there?
So romance is kind of like in the now. It's like a moment by moment experience off the cuff.
Yeah. And so an example of, I did a class the other night, and it was a class that I teach at public classes. And it was Middle Eastern vegetarian class. And so I had the most amount of fun, but from the class, I get feedback from one of the participants that Tony guy was kind of out of control. He was drunk. He was rude. He was this, he was that. And I was like gobsmacked by this email. And I just realized how much this particular person wasn't willing to accept the fun, the joy, the craziness, the erraticness. Now, we put names to it all, but it's actually just creation. When we see kind of a child going wild and doing their thing, we don't actually label them, or sometimes we do, but we kind of like expect an adult to be measured, that the romance or the preparation is measured.
Okay, so when you just talked about like a child and kind of having an experience with food, are you saying that there's something that children kind of are aware of with food that maybe starts to shift as we get older?
Yeah. One of the crazies is we get this amazing food pyramid that people tell us about, a food pyramid. People tell us that we need to eat our greens, that we need to have certain substances and that'll make us grow strong and so on and so on. And it's kind of the unromantic scientist's who will measure this and give us reasons why. And so our little bodies are kind of like, you know, they're growing and we kind of buy the stories and then we start to live in this little box called nutrition or health and nutrition. And there are volumes written on it and we forget to we take ourselves out of the equation. We take these bodies out of the equation. We are now a product. We are like a laboratory that we can experiment on. But we're doing it through a scientist's eyes or nutritionist's eyes rather than, oh shit, you know, what would I like to eat now? What texture, what color, what flavor, what quantity? And I might not want to eat. And I might be just getting so much fun in my life that actually a small amount of food's adequate. So are we getting sort of trapped in the medical model? Then maybe even our cultural model, like our culture, I'm Italian, maybe the Italians will feed you certain foods. And what if your body kind of prefers Asian, which is what I prefer. So kind of around Asian food, I light up. And as soon as someone gives me a plate of pasta, Italian pasta, I don't. So are we really not allowing these little bodies as they grow to have their say?
I am actually the same way. Any Asian dish just like lights my body up. I get super, super, super excited. Mm. And so, okay. So science is kind of one of the ways that we are cutting ourselves off from the romance that is available with food. And I believe that we are kind of cutting ourselves off in other more fun and complicated ways. Mm. One example that comes to mind for me is when I was in my last relationship, I felt like food was something that I was using as a weapon in that relationship. Mm-hmm. And so I would cook food and I would put my heart into food. Of course, not super aware of the food, but you know, I took my time to prepare the food. Mm-hmm. And then my partner would refuse to eat the food using excuses. And I found myself starting to get like heartbroken mm-hmm. over the fact that my partner would not receive the food that I cooked. And so from that point forward, I was like, at a certain point, like, I'm not cooking anymore like that anymore. And so I stopped preparing like full meals. And it was like, just throw this together. And it's been that way for years now. I cut myself off from like full meals because I was heartbroken because my partner would not receive from me. So like, what is that insanity?
Yeah, it's just funny. We all cultures, but I just came to me like mothers use food. We use food to bribe our kids. We use food to to bring someone closer to me, to bring someone indoors, to shut somebody up. So where are we using food as a way of manipulating that person or get them to love me, to like me, to do something? So what if we didn't have to do that? And what if we just cooked for the joy of it for yourself? Because I can see how I do it. I have a little boy and I can see it how occasionally I'm like, well, I've cooked these meals and I would like you to eat it because I don't want to cook another meal. And it's done lovingly. And it's like, well, it's done with love. So where am I trying to force what I want to eat, what I want to into him? And, you know, what if he in that moment really just doesn't require that, requires something different or nothing? So sometimes we push something of us into that person. We try and push it. And I just had these images of my mother shoving food down my mouth and me kind of spitting it and eating it because that meant being a good boy. So, you know, what if... Yeah, we're trying to get someone to love us.
So it's like we're not choosing to be aware with food and simultaneously we're making food significant. And so I decided because my partner would not eat my food that meant something about myself and like I created all these wow.
So for him, that food was not digestible because it was loaded with
me.
Yeah. Other shit, right? he had added ingredients that he didn't actually want and he couldn't stomach. So it's like kind of supplements. He had supplements that he just did, his body didn't need.
Yeah, because I filled that with me and he was not able to receive me. Yeah. So the food was loaded with me. It's like, no, I don't want to eat that. Heartburn or something.
Yeah, totally. So
wow. So like a lot of us cannot be received through food even. Or what is that? Like, what did I just say?
What if you're making it significant? What if you think that he needs vitamin C, but actually he doesn't need vitamin C, he needs vitamin D. So it's a different version of you that he loves and adores that he can receive, but we're making food significant. We're trying to squeeze something in there that probably doesn't need to be squeezed in. And the more that we squeeze that kind of nutrient, the more somebody repels and rebels against that. It's like,
wow. So like I kind of maybe added extra energies into that food. Like notice me, pay attention to me, love me, spend time with me.
Yeah.
Oh, so I loaded my food.
Yeah. Overload.
Wow. So food, I used food as a weapon, sort of.
Yeah.
And he used food as a weapon right back.
Yeah. Well, he couldn't stomach it. He put his shield up. It's like, fuck off. in the process, you freeze. Like, you're trying to protect yourself. And I see that. And it's great that you mentioned that because I do that too. And I'm looking at, I remember an image of my sister with her young daughter. And on the plate, she would put every nutritious food under the planet. So this poor kid would be getting the mung beans and the pickles and the this and that. And the poor child is like, how do I stomach that? How do I stomach all those foods? And they're all potent foods. But it's like the body just goes into scramble. It's like that is way too much to fathom. It is like opening up every program in the computer. The computer will freeze. So it's like, what if I could just give one little food that's just yummy? And it might even be just popcorn at a certain point. It might be a luscious pumpkin soup, or it might be roast chicken. So what if I just give one ingredient? It doesn't have to have all the greens and the sauce and the blah, blah, blah. And what if just that in itself spreads the joy, the romance, the warmth throughout the body rather than, here, have a ton of goodness that's just going to weigh you down and make you feel shit about yourself because you have to finish the whole plate because that's what my mum said. You'd have to finish the whole plate if you don't finish the whole dish. So it actually makes you feel worse rather than better.
So as an example, that mother you were describing may have been putting lots of love in her food. And so she wants that kid to have all the love that she has for the kid, right? And she has points of views about what that child requires, right? Instead of using awareness as to what that child actually requires.
Yeah.
So we're making a lot of assumptions. We have a lot of judgments, a lot of points of views. We're not using awareness. Mm-hmm. And we're like trying to give people things through food besides food. Like it's not so much even about the food. It's like not so much the food. It's like, what are we trying to prove?
Yeah.
So wow.
And how, if you're kind of on the receiving end of that, how undigestible is that?
Wow, I do that with my kids. Like, you need food. Your body needs food. I need you to put this in your body. Yeah. And that's not how I say it, but energetically, like, that's what it is, right? Yeah. And they're like, I don't want this. And I'm like, put this in your body. Romantic. Yeah. That is so romantic.
Yeah. So, hey, like we all do that. Like, and we're all kind of like, we're so busy. But isn't it funny? We get so busy and we fashion or make all this food. But on occasions, I zero into my little boy and I go, wow, what is he? He's not kind of wanting to eat anything. And so can I sense into what would be appropriate right now? What would he love? And sometimes it's just toast. And I watch the joy and I'll toast him two pieces of bread, lather something on it, and they usually tahini or butter. And he'll just eat that. And I'll feel okay about it. It's actually, he's okay about it because he'll digest that lovingly and he'll turn it into whatever nutrients he needs to turn it into. But it's when you feel okay about it that actually he can digest it. If you're sitting in the corner feeling, whipping yourself in judgment, well, I shouldn't have done that, I shouldn't give him that, then he has to eat not only the food, but your judgment. So he cannot stomach it. So when you actually let go and go, actually, he's just going to have popcorn now, he's just going to have toast now, because you sense that that's going to be the most appropriate food, then you give him the freedom to eat that without the additives, which is you. So imagine trying to stomach the food, then try and stomach your mum or your dad. It's like, fuck that, it's a load. That is heavy shit.
Wow.
Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. So if we could prepare food or serve food with allowance, that could be digestible.
Yeah. So often he's there, he's in the space, and you just pull energy through the child or the other person. It's like, you know, what's going to be appropriate here? What texture, color, feeling? I mean, I don't actually think it, I feel it, but you could be asking what texture, what flavor, what color. And sometimes that awareness just comes up. It's orange, it's coconut cream, it's orange pumpkin, it's lush. And, you know, that's kind of using all your senses, and it's quite sensual, you know, and sometimes it's hard, it's crunchy. And this is just, to me, this is the romance. This is the bit where you're drawing the flavors from the person's body. And it's like, this is what they require, not what you require, not what science requires, not that bullshit. It's like, okay, what does he require? So you kind of move in the preparation. And sometimes it's not much, and sometimes it's a lot, but they don't actually need a lot of that food, because you're now pulling from their body colors, flavors, textures that's going to add to that body and make them feel awesome. And I know that it could be just spoonfuls, but we go into, let's give you a bucket full. Let's give it, because your
body. Absolutely.
But spoonfuls is enough. Does that make sense? Because if
we're
zeroing into a vibration that they require, and it's in the form of food. So if we're saying that food is alive and food wants to contribute, it doesn't mean a whole plate full or 200 grams or 250 grams or a bowl full. It could be half a. So sometimes I'm feeding him and I sense into that's enough. Even though the bowl was full, he ate a quarter or half, and it's like, that's enough. And I will check in. Do you require more? Do you require more? And the answer is no. Now, I don't tell anyone. I don't tell his mother or anybody else that I only give him half bowls of soup, but I'm okay. And he's okay the next morning. He's still functioning.
So you're like trusting your awareness, and you're trusting your child to know what their body requires.
Yeah. Again, it is a muscle that you kind of practice this one. But honestly, you know, you look at the child and you know the child's never going to starve. So you're better off giving them smaller amounts of food, or anyone smaller amounts of food, and leaving space for energy, oxygen, air. Always, because you can always have someone craving for more, which is lovely. Like, that's really romancing when someone is craving more and they come to you. It's like, I require more. They will beg for more. Like, isn't that lovely when someone's begging you for more? Then you can overfill someone and there's no room for anything else, or you can underfill them and then they're coming to you like, I require more. Then isn't that a lovely reciprocal thing where they come for more, you give more, and the energy of that is much nicer than overfilled someone to the point where they can't move, can't speak, and have nothing left.
Yeah, so you're giving them choice. They can come back if they want more, as opposed to giving them a lot and saying, finish all of that, because that's what you have to do.
Yeah.
Because that's what your body needs.
Yeah. And sometimes it's the convenience. It's like, this is lunchtime, this is dinner time. Make sure you eat all your meal, because I'm going to wash the dishes and we're going to move on to the next thing. And so we make meals or mealtime important.
Breakfast, significant.
breakfast, lunch, and dinner. What if they could graze all day, or we could all graze all day, and we didn't have to monitor the quantity? It was the quality. Rather than breakfast is that much, dinner is that much, or lunch is that much. It's like, well, what if a person grazed? And what if children like to graze and have small amounts throughout the day?
Wow, yeah. So you would have to let go of that construct of breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Yeah.
And that kind of may require like rearranging, because, you know, some people plan out all of their meals every day. And like, if you go outside of that, it's like, oh my God, brain can't function. Like, I haven't prepared anything. And
yeah.
Wow. Mm. So, like, I wonder what it would be like to let go of that structure and just let the bodies choose all day and use awareness to serve quantity. Wow. That feels really expansive.
Does everyone get hungry at midday at 12? And does everyone get hungry at 6? Truthfully, I get up early, except for this morning, and I'm really hungry first thing. So I'll make like a porridge, and sometimes I'll fight it. I'll go, well, hang on, Tony, it's like 6 a.m. or 5 a.m. and you're eating porridge. Can't you wait till 7? It's like, and I'm like, whose voice is that? And it's like, well, I'm actually hungry now. I'll eat now. And, you know, I've been eating quite a bit of chocolate lately in the evenings, and it's funny. It is part of the meal. It's not separate from the meal. It's not after the meal. I mean, it is a little bit after the meal, but it's on the plate. Like the other night, it was like I got home and I've been pickling olives. So I had pickled olives with bread, and then I made these little pikelets because they were leftover pancakes, and I put some wild salmon in the pikelets, and then there was chocolate. So chocolate is part of the pyramid for me. It was on the dish, and it wasn't the, oh, we have it after. It's like it is a major ingredient. And it was a really beautiful meal. And I had never done that before. Probably never to be repeated. But I have to admit that got up the next morning and felt amazing. Was it the chocolate? Was it the combination? What was it? So I'm saying that you'll be fighting, your brain will be fighting what is on the plate, what wants to be on the plate, what wants to romance you. Because, you know, what if these ingredients want to romance you? And for me, it was the olives. And I tell you, I make these really bitter olives and I love them. And as I eat them, I'm in ecstasy. I'm so turned on. And I'm eating them with the garlic and the olive oil. It's all going dripping down my hands and I'm eating bread. And I'm like, fuck, I can't get enough of this. And then I go, well, I'll make the little pancake mix and I'm mixing that with the olives. And they're kind of going to bed together and they're having a little party on the plate. And then I know that my friend who makes chocolate has given me this chocolate. And I'm like, I am just going to eat this and eat this. And I ate a lot. So that was it was kind of romance in the plate. It was romancing me. It was, did I have my nutritional, was nutritionally balanced? Did I have all the food groups? I have not, I'm unsure. And I didn't care in that moment. It was exciting.
Okay, so I get exactly what you're talking about. When I feed my children who are quite young, I have them on this like three, actually they're like on a 4 times a day schedule. 3 definitely doesn't work for them because they get hungry pretty fast. Mm. But like my kids get hungry about an hour after they eat.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
This isn't fitting into the schedule. And like, I do make them more food, but it's like, but even though I do this over and over every day, like my brain is still on this schedule of like the 4 times a day. And like my brain is like refusing to move into their actual schedule, despite the fact that this is what we do every day. So thank you for pointing that out, because I feel like I can just let that go. Let that schedule go in my brain.
Yeah. And
so you talked about how the food, okay. It sounded like you were having an orgasmic experience when you talked about your olives.
Can you hold that? Hold the olives.
Yes.
That
hold the olives.
Hold the olives. dripping down your hand. Now, that I just want to get back to that, what you just said then about the children are hungry an hour after. That's a really fascinating one, because mine is also. And so basically I will find foods that he loves to eat an hour later or 2 hours later that have a texture that will fill him. So my example is, an hour later, he may be having a hummus dip with toast. So the hummus dip has oils in it. It has nice, fatty, heavy oils that he loves. So his breakfast might be pancakes. It might be a porridge. But it's usually lighter and he loves it. It's slightly sweet. And then an hour later, he has something heavier that actually helps him get further into his body, more grounded, more present. And that gives him this kind of build, like a kind of a heavy build, so he can really get into the day and feel rock solid.
I see. So now, okay, yeah.
Now each individual child will be different, but if we can, it's not about filling them, it's about giving them a texture that has a bit of a grounding quality. So is it peanut butter? Is it butter? Is it tahini? Is it, you know, a rice dish? Because if we give them just puffed up, aerated bread or rice cakes or biscuits, they're aerated. So they would just move through the body too quickly. So I kind of look at what solid foods can I give him at this point that will actually help him engage the energy of the day or the lunchtime and have him entering the day rather than aerated food. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I totally get that.
I'm not saying that you do that. I'm saying that this is kind of, I look at Oliver and it's like, okay, what's solid here? That, because otherwise he'll be grazing all day and he'll never be feeling that connected to the earth feeling. He'll be like, oh
yeah,
my God,
what you're talking
give
about.
Me chocolates, give me biscuits. And I can see him always hankering. So there's a point where I want to nail him to the ground for, not for my benefit, but also his benefit. And his energy is so much better then. And then his afternoons are so much easier. Otherwise, you're always grappling for something. Anyway, that's all I had to say about that.
I totally get that. And so I can use my awareness to see what they require to kind of give them that, what their body requires, what their body is looking for.
I mean, a beautiful thing in Asian cookery, when I look at the Chinese and the Thai and even the Indian, they have savory breakfasts. They have savory foods, and often they have grains and beans, and they have a congee, and they have, it's kind of soupy. It has a bit of protein in the form of either tofu or meat. And we in Australia, we're a bit foreign to that, but we have a lot of Asian cultures here. So when I eat those savory breakfasts, and they are just so nurturing and nourishing, rather than the sweet, sugary things, which is obviously in Australia, that's top of the list, and I'm sure it is in America. So what if we looked at, okay, what are we actually serving them? Would their bodies prefer a warm, savory breakfast? So I make savory pancakes for Oliver and or savory porridges, not overly sweet. And so he's getting that kind of grounding, savory-ish food straight up. He gets sweetener throughout the day. But what if we didn't make sweetener the number one breakfast item? Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. And that is something that I have been looking at for my kids, because in my house, it's automatic sweet. And I have been asking questions around like, what else is possible? And when I offer them choices, they're not interested in anything else. So for me, that has been this place of, what else is there? Like, where do I go from here? So absolutely.
Awesome. Okay, olives. Did you have an olive question?
Yes, I do. It sounded like you were having an orgasmic experience when you were talking about the olives. So I'm curious, do you believe that there is like an orgasmic quality that can be had with food? And if so, how do we get there? Because that sounds really romantic.
Can you plan it? Can it be planned? So what if it's just, what if it's a surprise? What if the romance is a surprise? Because, you know, when we plan a romantic dinner, it's not always romantic, or we will it to be or want it to be. What if we open ourselves up to what's possible in this moment? You know, what foods would I like to play with? What textures, what colors? A little bit like dressing up, what's going to feel great on my skin? What outfit would I like to wear? It changes. So what if that particular night, and it was, truthfully, I remember it was a few nights ago where I was like, I really want to cook a really lovely meal. And then I got home late and the olives just jumped out. So I warmed them. They weren't sort of cold. I warmed them and then had some nice bread and I toasted that and I just started to eat. And as I started that, it's like, okay, let's make these little pikelets. Okay, let's grab this. So my body was actually pulling me in certain directions with certain foods. And that's where sometimes people say to me, Tony, I have nothing in the pantry or nothing in the fridge. But, you know, what if you start to just kind of, things are beckoning you and you might be calling things forth. So what if it's kind of an interplay? And what if it didn't need to look like a meal? And you go, okay, well, I'm just going to have these textures now and I'm going to look in the pantry and it's like, yeah, that's jumping at me. Or do I need to make a stir fry? Or do I really want to make, on a rare occasion, I was like, oh God, I need to make a plate of pasta with lots of olive oil, garlic and chili. It's rare, but on occasions I'll eat that. And it's like, it's a turn on. I don't need to eat a lot of it. And I mightn't have the Parmesan cheese because I don't have Parmesan cheese in the fridge. But even that small bowl of that pasta cooked with garlic and olive oil and chili is just enough to just excite the senses and excite a part of me. Now, does it excite the past? Does it excite the future? Does it excite the moment? Because some of these foods are from my past. Some of the dishes I know really well, and maybe there's an emotion and a feeling that wants to be excited. But I don't go into the thinking. I go into, okay, jump out. And often things jump out, and sometimes, no, always something jumps out. Sometimes it's a bit dull, and then I'll just go into what do I require? What texture do I require? What color? And I'll cook from that space. And even when there is nothing around, I'll still find some textures, whether it's, and this is me, I have a pantry full of tahini, almond butter, coconut oil. Like, oils are kind of one of the most lathering ingredients and spreads. And then I have things like sort of pickles and sauerkraut and things. And sometimes I require the austerity of that. And sort of nuts and seeds can offer lots of joy and quite a sensualness. And then I also do grains. So there are people who don't do grains and beans. So I do those, and I also have canned chickpeas, and sometimes canned chickpeas are my go-to. It's like, oh my God, I'll just open the can, rinse them and eat them, or lather them in olive oil or warm them up. So there are things that I have in the pantry, my sort of go-to, my turn-on foods. They are my comfort foods. Sometimes I don't touch them for weeks or months, and sometimes like I can't get enough of it. Anyone else like that?
Absolutely. So you're saying that like food can be an invitation to you.
Yeah.
So, okay, this is something that you and I definitely have in common, and it's that we both know that food has consciousness. Mm. And I think on some level we all know that, but do we really allow that to be our experience? Do we allow it to be something that we practice and choose to be aware of?
So
which sounds like is required, right? Yeah. To have food be that invitation to you.
Yeah. Well, as soon as you said all that, I thought, romancing you. Are you willing to romance you? Are you willing to, like, you're preparing food for the family, but are you willing to take a small portion of that and make it you, rather than, oh my God, the mother or the father eats all the leftovers? So what if a small portion of it? Now, funny you say that, because I often will cook different than Oliver, or I'll cook separately and I might even eat before him. And the moments when I do that, it's like, oh my God, I'm romancing me. I'm actually eating what I require. And so if you could do that, then you could actually then offer that to others, to your children or your partners. And the experience could just be a beautiful experience rather than significant, rather than, oh my God, that's a meal, or that's going to be torture, or that's going to be, it's just, I romance me, and they, and I will choose, I'll not choose, but I will see what they require. And it's, you know, when they've eaten a meal, when others around you have eaten a meal, and it's just, it's gone to their core and they've enjoyed that, you know that. I think you do.
Yes.
Yeah.
So in order to romance you with food, you have to choose to be aware of what your body requires and like be aware of the food that is choosing your body, right? Like, yeah. Is that a weird way to put it? Does food choose your body? Does food?
It's challenging. It's challenging because we go into nutritional guidelines, food pyramids, and we often, and you know, am I paleo? Am I vegan? Am I this? So we've got some sort of serious groups that we may have joined, want to join, want to be. And then we have stuff around food like, oh my God, if I have that, it's fattening. I hear that all the time. It's fattening. That. So there's a whole, before you even choose the food, there's a whole bunch of programs that are there sitting in front of you. So how can we eliminate all the programming and actually go direct? Go direct. And yeah, I haven't, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. So, but I'm still curious, does food choose us?
I actually think we choose food, and we choose the food, and we choose food like we choose an energy. Like for example, I had bowl full of greens yesterday, and it's like, oh my God, my body was in ecstasy, and I haven't had greens for a while. So am I choosing greens because I need the iron, the calcium? Or am I choosing the greens because I love the leafy nature of it and I want to float out into the ethers? Am I choosing greens because I just want to cleanse? There'll be a bunch of reasons that we can use. Or can we just go, oh my God, I grow greens and I need to eat them. My body says I need to eat them. And stop it at that rather than go into the story and just eat the greens. I want to bring the greens into my body because I want to bring that energy into my body. I come into the kitchen and say, how do you want to be done, greens? And they were just tossed in olive oil with garlic, or they want to be blanched, or they want to go into a ricotta dish. You know, it's like, talk to the greens. The greens will kind of go, do they want to be partnered? And then I don't think you have to eat all of them. Well, it's lovely if you need to eat them. Sometimes I eat them and I want more. So who's choosing? I think you're choosing. I think the body's choosing an energy and saying, that's what I require right now. Give it to me. Give it to me. And I don't care how you give it to me, but give it to me. I then become the romantic participant and ask the gorgeous greens, how would you like to be cooked? How would you like to be touched? How would you like to be fashioned? And then I make them even more digestible. I mean, they could be had raw, but what if the romance is, how do I make them more digestible so that I can take them into my body and have the full orgasm of the greens?
So what role would you say food plays in this romancing topic? I went grocery shopping yesterday, and when I got to the produce section, I looked at bags of oranges and I was like, okay, which bag of oranges wants to come home with me? And it was like, oh, there's one. Like, there's always this one that sticks out to me. I went to the onions and it was like, oh, which onions want to come home with me? And it's like, okay, this one wants to come home with me. So what role does the food play in this romance? Because there's this different energy about some, like one of them or multiples of them.
Yeah.
And that is just this really cool dynamic. Yeah. And it's something I've always noticed. And I think I had to let go a lot of point of views about food, which seems like there's a lot more space for letting go of points of views. But like, what do you think the role is that food plays in this romancing?
So funny. I know we've had this discussion, and it's funny because I naturally choose that which pops its hand up and says, me, 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 me. So I've always done that. I've never thought about it until you brought this up.
Mm-hmm.
And now I can see, because I'll actually touch certain foods and I won't take every one of them home. I'll sort of touch them, or some will speak to me just like that. And that's quite fascinating, because what if that particular food, again, has the energy, excitement that you require, that your body requires.
Exactly.
And it's saying, I want to come to your party, or I want to come to bed with you. and like, I'll do anything to come to bed with you.
Yes.
Mm.
Yes. Now, here's an interesting thing. I was totally using lack on this, but there was this beef that I was going to buy, and like, it was a little pricey for me. I didn't want to buy that. Mm. And I literally meant to put it away. I literally meant to put it back. And when I got home, there it was. And I was like, oh, you really wanted to come home with me. You really wanted to come home with me.
That's
so it's like, okay, what contribution can I receive from this? I'm actually really excited to cook this beef. I'm going to slow cook it, and it's going to, I can't wait to eat that. Does food have choice? That's what I want to know. Does food have choice? Because I felt very much like, I'm not going to pay for that right now. I don't feel like that right now for that much money. But the beef was like, here I am. So, yeah.
Yeah. I love that. I go to a really nice supermarket, and it's similar. Like, they've got all this meat on display. It's like, it is pornography. It's there. It's all there. It's all displayed, and there's the best cuts of beef or lamb. And of course, working in restaurants, we use it all. But when you've got your own budget for home, you kind of go, oh, maybe, maybe not. No, should I, shouldn't I? And because it is pricey. And I love that, because occasionally, let's just say it's a piece of lamb and can be expensive. I will actually probably buy a smaller amount, even though the bigger amount is more the tease. It's like, oh my God, take me home. But I will go, well, actually, that's kind of like out of control, and probably I would need to feed a huge family with that. So why don't I just buy a few lamb cutlets and enjoy that? But you're right. It is a push-pull. You get there and all of it is take me home, take me home. Now, it's good, because sometimes you take it home and you cook it. And again, like, you've got that beef, you don't actually have to cook it all. And you don't have to, it doesn't have to be for one meal. Like, I bought a whole chicken the other day, and I haven't been buying whole chickens. I've been buying cuts of chickens, but this is a really nice organic free range chook. And it's like, take me home. I'm like, really? Have I got time to bone this chicken, break it down? and so I took the mother home, right? I took her home, and I had time, and I boned the chook. And so with the thigh bits, the thighs, legs, I marinated them in a Moroccan spice mix with oil, garlic, preserved lemon, and I put them in Ziploc bags and I froze it. So there was two legs, two thighs, and they were in separate bags. So there's two lots of that. And then there was the breasts, and I boned the breasts, and I had one and then froze the other. And then there's the carcass, the bone itself. So I made a stock. So at the same time, I'm cutting this, and I'm making bits for tomorrow, bits for next week. And then I'm making this stock that's just smelling so beautiful through the house. So I've used every morsel of this chook that I was kind of like, do I really need to do this? Really?
Right.
So I've actually made meals of it. And so this will continue, because the stock will continue to be used in soups in the next 3 or 4 weeks. The frozen thighs will come out in the next 1 or 2 weeks. So what I'm saying to you, that piece of beef, whatever it looks like, is come home, but it doesn't actually have to be just one meal. It can be cut and put into 2 or 3 meals. I include lots of vegetables in my cooking. So when I'm cooking meat, I don't make it the mass it's the meat, then the vegetables. I kind of cook Asian style where the meat or the protein is a small portion, but the vegetables, the liquid, noodles, a bigger part. So rather than go, oh my God, that's expensive. Like, and I do see that with, and Australians will eat like that. The meat is the hero and the vegetables are the side dish. But when you look at Asian cooking, it's like meat is just a small portion of it. So rather than, we will slow cook it, but you could still, some of it could be saved for another day or could be frozen or doesn't have to all be on the plate.
No, that is really awesome and beautiful. And, I immediately felt, I just laughed when I saw that beef in the fridge because my daughter, my 13-year-old put it away. So not only did I not see it like put it away myself or see it in the cart, like I saw it in my refrigerator. Wow. So it was like, here I am. It was really funny. So yeah, I'm totally going to use all of it and I can't wait to taste it because my body is actually pretty excited to have that.
Yeah. I can see also for the family, like if it's that slow roasted, it's lush, deep, it's sensual, it's grounding. It's just like a mouthful of that is kind of like the ultimate turn on or the ultimate. Yeah, beef is just kind of this heavier meat, which is just lovely, rich, you know, full of blood, and it's just awesome.
So another way that we can romance ourselves with food is to, like, allow ourselves to have what, A, our bodies require and what is trying to come home with us.
Yeah.
And that means you have to let go of the points of views or choose, like, right? Like you have total choice regardless of the points of views that you have. So it's like you have to choose that. You have to choose to allow that regardless of what points of views you have and all of the reasons in science and the time of day and and potentially your wallet. So romancing you can also look like allowing yourself that cake.
Yeah.
Or the olives or the expensive beef.
Totally. And really taking the whole judgment out of it. Like is it the time of the day? Is it totally all of that? And it's kind of really like barriers down and really feeling into, I'd like to feed myself, but feed myself on such a deep level that it has nothing to do with anything or anyone.
Communion with food.
Yeah.
That's what I just got when you said deep level. And the communion is allowing yourself to be aware of your body's choices and what the food is wanting. And so would you mind if we like did a little bit of clearing around points of views around food? Like what food looks like or like all of that.
Yeah.
So, just to create a little bit of space in possibility for food.
Yeah. Well, everywhere, the image came up to everywhere we are keeping food under wrap or wrapping it or locking it or containing it and not even allowing it to express itself and be itself and fly. Can we just let that go from all of our universes?
Oh, my God, yes.
Do that now. Vanish, vanquish, vanish, vanquish, vanish, vanquish, vanish, vanquish, vanish, vanquish, vanish, vanquish. You know, everywhere we're just keeping it under wraps and just keeping it closed and closeted and rather than expressed and, you know, on the bench, in my face. You know, we spend so much time with packaged food and it really keeps us distance from food. So what if we started to release it and actually start to touch it differently, handle it differently, look at it differently. I mean, one of the things I remember was when I kind of was awakened to this way of doing food, I start to be gentle with food and I start to, the part of the romance is I take it to my body and I feel the pulse of the food. So everywhere we are keeping ourselves distanced or like even pretending to not even touch it or want to touch it and feel like, can we let that all go, all that medicinal way of looking at food? Can we just like let it go from all of our universes and everywhere we've picked that up and let it all go right now, please?
Yes.
Vaporize.
Yeah, and like sterile and like cold. It's like there's a separation.
So where did that all that come from? Why are we so distanced from it? Because we go, if you go to farmers markets, there it is. There's the farmer, there's the grower, and there's the food. And there's no real barriers. There's no wrap. It's not wrapped. It's not enclosed. And one of the greatest turn-ons is for me to go to markets. I mean, I know it's not possible for everyone, but I would go to markets and I would pick this kind of beetroot, still got its leaves on it. I'd go there and I'd get the eggs from that person who's still got a bit of cow shit on their fingers. And I'd go there, and as soon as I see it, that it's packaged and it's got a really long shelf life, I kind of, it's not like I don't buy it, but I'm scared of it. I'm like, okay, that's packaged. Has it got chemicals? Is it preserved? Does my body really want that? And so farmers markets and markets themselves where food is exposed and allowed to be itself is a turn on because I can feel it, touch it, sense it. I can connect to it. So everywhere we've stopped our connection or lost connection or not even had connection, and we're only connected to boxed food, pre-prepared food, can we just kind of let that go and try and start a relationship with real food, which means food that's not necessarily packaged and just it's vibrating. It could be old, it could be wilted, it could be blemished. Like, let's start a romance with that and see what that could do.
And everywhere we didn't know we could have a relationship with food.
Yeah. Yeah. Vaporize. Because I think we, you know, maybe was not in our cultures. As a trained chef, it was quite interesting. I used to think that I didn't have that relationship. I cooked food. It was my profession. But then there was a point where actually I looked at it, or it looked at me differently, and I started to taste. I was fascinated at when I started, actually got quite ill. So the process was I was kind of this high-flying French chef, got really unwell, and I really needed to start to cook for me and cook differently. And I started to taste food. And when I started to chew food and taste food, my body was like in heaven. It was like, thank God you're listening to me. You are feeling me. You are wanting to nourish me. Thank God you've turned up, Tony. And from that day on, my relationship changed. My intake, my enjoyment, my weight changed. My life, the way I viewed the world changed. My body was like, thank God you've turned up. So I have to say that everywhere that you are just scoffing, eating on the run or as a necessity or I must do, I should do, can we let go and try and loosen those points of views around food and look at a new way of taking food in?
Absolutely. I choose that.
Yeah. Yeah. All of that. Vanish, vanquish. Vaporize.
Yeah. Like, let's do one more clearing and tell people how they can join us.
Cool. Everywhere you've made this difficult and hard and painful, would you now be willing to release that and release that from all of your universes and release it from your body now and forever? Would you choose that?
I choose that.
Vaporize, vanish, vanquish. Release. Soften. Release it into the earth. Release. What if this could just be easeful, joyful, romantic, and exciting?
Wow, that is absolutely yummy. Like, when you said earth, like, I felt all these energies. Like, so I'm getting that there's this whole other element to romance with food and the earth. Like, that's a whole other topic.
Yeah,
from you just talking about the earth.
Stay tuned.
Yeah. So, thank you so much for sharing everything that, well, not everything, but thank you for sharing what you know so far about romance with food. And I'd like to invite everybody to another call with me and Tony, where we are going to be discussing, this is so juicy, romance at the grocery store. Romance at the grocery store. Tony and I both think that grocery shopping is like one of the most romantic things that you can possibly do. Oh my God, I cannot wait to talk about this. We will also be clearing space for you receiving the invitation at Foodbee and clearing space for you to romance you, your family, your children, and everyone in your life with food. So stay tuned, and thank you so much for joining me, Sherry Nova, and Tony Chiodo on this call, number one of Romancing with Food. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.